"Old Maggot is a shrewd fellow," said Mary. "A lot goes on behind his round face that doesn't come out in his talk. I've heard that he used to go into the Old Forest at one time, and he has the reputation of knowing a good many strange things. But you can at least tell us, Frodo, whether you think his guess good or bad."
"I think," answered Frodo slowly, "that it was a good guess as far as it goes. There is a connection with Bilbo's old adventures, and the riders are looking, or perhaps one ought to say searching, for him or for me. I also fear, if you want to know, that it's no joke at all, and that I'm not safe here or anywhere else." He looked round at the windows and walls, as if he was afraid they would suddenly give way. The others looked at him in silence, and exchanged meaning glances among themselves.
"It's coming out in a minute," whispered Pippin to Merry.
Merry nodded. "Well," said Frodo at last, sitting up and straightening his back, as if he had made a decision, "I can't keep it dark any longer. I've got something to tell you all, but I don't quite know how to begin."
"I think I could help you," said Merry quietly, "by telling you some of it myself."
"What do you mean?" said Frodo, looking at him anxiously.
"Just this, my dear old Frodo. You're miserable because you don't know how to say goodbye. You meant to leave the Shire, of course, but danger has come on you sooner than you expected, and now you're making up your mind to go at once, and you don't want to. We're very sorry for you."
Frodo opened his mouth and shut it again. His look of surprise was so comical that they laughed.
"Dear old Frodo," said Pippin, "did you really think that you'd thrown dust in all our eyes? You haven't been nearly careful or clever enough for that. You've obviously been planning to go and saying farewell to all your haunts all this year since April. We've constantly heard you muttering, 'Shall I ever look down into that valley again, I wonder?' and things like that, and pretending that you'd come to the end of your money, and actually selling your beloved Bag End to those Sackville Bagginses, and all those close talks with Gandalf."
"Good heavens," said Frodo, "I thought I'd been both careful and clever. I don't know what Gandalf would say. Is all the Shire discussing my departure then?"
"Oh, no," said Merry. "Don't worry about that. The secret won't keep for long, of course. But at present it is, I think, only known to us conspirators. After all, you must remember that we know you well, and are often with you. We can usually guess what you're thinking. I knew Bilbo, too. To tell you the truth, I'd been watching you rather closely ever since he left. I thought you'd go after him sooner or later. Indeed, I expected you to go sooner, and lately we've been very anxious. We've been terrified that you might give us the slip and go off suddenly, all on your own, like he did. Ever since this spring we've kept our eyes open and done a good deal of planning on our own account. You're not going to escape so easily."
"But I must," said Frodo.
"It can't be helped, dear friends. It's wretched for us all, but it's no use your trying to keep me. Since you've guessed so much, please help me, and don't hinder me."
"You don't understand," said Pippin. "You must go, and therefore we must too. Merry and I are coming with you. Sam is an excellent fellow, and would jump down a dragon's throat to save you, if he didn't trip over his own feet. But you'll need more than one companion in your dangerous adventures."
"My dear and most beloved hobbits," said Frodo, deeply moved, "but I couldn't allow it. I decided that long ago, too. You speak of danger, but you don't understand. This is no treasure hunt, no there-and-back journey. I'm flying from deadly peril into deadly peril."
"Of course we understand," said Merry firmly. "That's why we've decided to come. We know the ring is no laughing matter, but we're going to do our best to help you against the enemy."
"The ring?" said Frodo, now completely amazed.
"Yes, the ring," said Merry. "My dear old hobbit, you don't allow for the inquisitiveness of friends. I've known about the existence of the ring for years,
before Bilbo went away, in fact. But since he obviously regarded it as secret, I kept the knowledge in my head until we formed our conspiracy. I didn't know Bilbo, of course, as well as I know you. I was too young, and he was also more careful. But he wasn't careful enough. If you want to know how I first found out, I'll tell you.
Go on, said Frodo faintly.
It was the Sackville Bagginses that were his downfall, as you might expect. One day, a year before the party, I happened to be walking along the road when I saw Bilbo ahead. Suddenly, in the distance, the SPs appeared, coming towards us. Bilbo slowed down, and then, hey presto, he vanished. I was so startled that I hardly had the wits to hide myself in a more ordinary fashion, but I got through the hedge and walked along the field inside. I was peeping through into the road after the SBs had passed, and was looking straight at Bilbo when he suddenly reappeared. I caught a glint of gold as he put something back in his trouser pocket. After that I kept my eyes open. In fact, I confess I spied. But you must admit that it was very intriguing, and I was only in my teens. I must be the only one in the Shire, besides you, Frodo, that's ever seen the old fellow's secret book.
You've read his book, cried Frodo. Good heavens above! Is nothing safe?
Not too safe, I should say, said Merry. But I've only had one rapid glance, and that was difficult to get. He never left the book about.
I wonder what became of it.
I should like another look.
Have you got it, Frodo?
No, it wasn't at Bag End. He must have taken it away.
Well, as I was saying, Merry proceeded, I kept my knowledge to myself till this spring when things got serious. Then we formed our conspiracy, and as we were serious, too, and meant business, we've not been too scrupulous.
You're not a very easy nut to crack, and Gandalf is worse. But if you want to be introduced to our chief investigator, I can produce him.
Where is he? Said Frodo, looking round, as if he expected a masked and sinister figure to come out of a cupboard.
Step forward, Sam, said Merry, and Sam stood up with a face scarlet up to the ears. Here's our collector of information. And he collected a lot, I can tell you, before he was finally caught. After which, I may say, he seemed to regard himself as on parole, and dried up.
Sam! Cried Frodo, feeling that amazement could go no further, and quite unable to decide whether he felt angry, amused, relieved, or merely foolish.
Yes, sir, said Sam. Begging your pardon, sir, but I meant no wrong to you, Mr. Frodo, nor to Mr. Gandalf, for that matter. He has some sense, mind you, and when you said, go alone, he said, no, take someone as you can trust.
But it doesn't seem that I can trust anyone, said Frodo.
Sam looked at him unhappily.
It all depends on what you want, put in Merry. You can trust us to stick to you through thick and thin, to the bitter end, and you can trust us to keep any secret of yours closer than you keep it yourself. But you can't trust us to let you face trouble alone, and go off without a word.
Where are your friends, Frodo?
Anyway, there it is. We know most of what Gandalf has told you. We know a good deal about the ring. We're horribly afraid, but we're coming with you. Or following you like hounds.
And after all, sir, added Sam, you did ought to take the elves' advice. Gildor said you should take them as was willing, and you can't deny it.
I don't deny it, said Frodo, looking at Sam, who was now grinning. I don't deny it, but I'll never believe you're sleeping again, whether you snore or not. I'll kick you hard to make sure.
"You are a set of deceitful scoundrels," he said, turning to the others.
"But bless you!" he laughed, getting up and waving his arms. "I give in. I'll take Gildor's advice. If the danger weren't so dark, I should dance for joy. Even so, I can't help feeling happy. Happier than I've felt for a long time. I dreaded this evening."
"Good! That's settled! Three cheers for Captain Frodo and company!"
they shouted, and they danced round him. Merry and Pippin began a song, which they had apparently got ready for the occasion. It was made on the model of the dwarf song that started Bilbo on his adventure long ago, and went to the same tune.
Farewell we call to hearth and hall, though wind may blow and rain may fall. We must away ere break of day, far over wood and mountain tall. To Rivendell, where elves yet dwell, in glades beneath the misty fell, through moor and waste we ride in haste, and whither then we cannot tell. With foes ahead, behind us dread, beneath the sky shall be our bed, until at last our toil be past, our journey done, our errand sped. We must away, we must away, we ride before the break of day.
Very good, said Frodo, but in that case there are a lot of things to do before we go to bed. Under a roof, for tonight at any rate.
Oh, that was poetry, said Pippin. Do you really mean to start before the break of day?
I don't know, answered Frodo. I fear those black riders, and I'm sure it's unsafe to stay in one place long, especially in a place to which it's known I was going. Also, Gildor advised me not to wait. But I should very much like to see Gandalf. I could see that even Gildor was disturbed when he heard that Gandalf had never appeared. It really depends on two things. How soon could the riders get to Bucklebury, and how soon could we get off? It'll take a good deal of preparation.
The answer to the second question, said Merry, is that we could get off in an hour. I've prepared practically everything. There are 6 ponies in a stable across the fields. Stores and tackle are all packed, except for a few extra clothes and the perishable food.
It seems to have been a very efficient conspiracy, said Frodo. But what about the Black Riders? Would it be safe to wait one day for Gandalf?
That all depends on what you think the Riders would do.
If they found you here, answered Merry, they could have reached here by now, of course, if they weren't stopped at the North Gate, where the hedge runs down to the river bank, just this side of the bridge. The gate guards wouldn't let them through by night, though they might break through. Even in the daylight they'd try to keep them out, I think, at any rate until they got a message through to the master of the hall, for they wouldn't like the look of the riders, and would certainly be frightened by them. But, of course, Buckland can't resist a determined attack for long, and it's possible that in the morning even a black rider that rode up and asked for Mr. Baggins would be let through. It's pretty generally known that you're coming back to live at Crick Hollow.
Frodo sat for a while in thought. I've made up my mind, he said finally. I'm starting tomorrow, as soon as it's light, but I'm not going by road. It would be safer to wait here than that. If I go through the North Gate, my departure from Buckland will be known at once, instead of being secret for several days at least, as it might be. And what's more, the bridge and the east road near the borders will certainly be watched, whether any rider gets into Buckland or not. We don't know how many there are, but there are at least 2, and possibly more. The only thing to do is to go off in a quite unexpected direction.
But that can only mean going into the Old Forest, said Fredegar, horrified. You can't be thinking of doing that. It's quite as dangerous as Black Riders.
Not quite, said Merry. It sounds very desperate, but I believe Frodo's right. It's the only way of getting off without being followed at once. With luck, we might get a considerable start.
But you won't have any luck in the Old Forest, objected Fredegar. No one ever has luck in there. You'll get lost. People don't go in there.
Oh, yes, they do, said Merry. The Brandybucks go in, occasionally, when the fit takes them. We have a private entrance. Frodo went in once, long ago. I've been in several times, usually in daylight, of course, when the trees are sleepy and fairly quiet.
Well, do as you think best, said Fredegar. I'm more afraid of the Old Forest than of anything I know about. The stories about it are a nightmare, but my vote hardly counts, as I'm not going on the journey. Still, I am very glad someone is stopping behind who can tell Gandalf what you've done when he turns up, as I'm sure he will before long.
Fond as he was of Frodo, Fatty Bulger had no desire to leave the Shire, nor to see what lay outside it. His family came from the East Farthing, from Budgeford in Bridgefield, in fact, but had never been over the Brandywine Bridge. His task, according to the original plans of the conspirators, was to stay behind and deal with inquisitive folk, and to keep up as long as possible the pretense that Mr. Baggins was still living at Crick Hollow. He'd even brought along some old clothes of Frodo's to help him in playing the part. They little thought how dangerous that part might prove.
"Excellent," said Frodo when he understood the plan. "We couldn't have left any message behind for Gandalf otherwise. I don't know whether these riders can read or not, of course, but I shouldn't have dared to risk a written message in case they got in and searched the house. But if Fatty's willing to hold the fort, and I can be sure of Gandalf knowing the way we've gone, that decides me. I'm going into the Old Forest first thing tomorrow."
"Well, that's that," said Pippin. "On the whole, I'd rather have our job than Fatty's, waiting here till Black Riders come."
"You wait till you're well inside the forest," said Fredegar. "You'll wish you were back with me before this time tomorrow."
"It's no good arguing about it any more," said Merry. "We've still got to tidy up and put the finishing touches to the packing before we get to bed. I shall call you all before the break of day."
When at last he'd got to bed, Frodo couldn't sleep for some time. His legs ached. He was glad that he was riding in the morning. Eventually he fell into a vague dream in which he seemed to be looking out of a high window over a dark sea of tangled trees. Down below, among the roots, there was the sound of creatures crawling and snuffling. He felt they would smell him out sooner or later. Then he heard a noise in the distance. At first he thought it was a great wind coming over the leaves of the forest. Then he knew that it was not leaves, but the sound of the sea far off, a sound he had never heard in waking life, though it had often troubled his dreams. Suddenly he found he was out in the open. There were no trees after all. He was on a dark heath, and there was a strange salt smell in the air. Looking up, he saw before him a tall white tower, standing alone on a high ridge. A great desire came over him to climb the tower and see the sea. He started to struggle up the ridge toward the tower, but suddenly a light came in the sky, and there was a noise of thunder. Chapter 6 The Old Forest. Frodo woke suddenly. It was still dark in the room. Merry was standing there with a candle in one hand and banging on the door with the other.
"All right, what is it?" said Frodo, still shaken and bewildered.
"What is it?" cried Merry. "It's time to get up. It's 4:30 and very foggy. Come on. Sam's already getting breakfast ready. Even Pippin is up. I'm just going to saddle the ponies and fetch the one that's to be the baggage carrier. Wake that sluggard Fatty. At least he must get up and see us off."
Soon after 6 o'clock, the five hobbits were ready to start. Fatty Bulger was still yawning. They stole quietly out of the house. Merry went in front, leading a laden pony, and took his way along a path that went through a spinney behind the house, and then cut across several fields. The leaves of trees were glistening, and every twig was dripping. The grass was grey with cold dew. Everything was still, and far away noises seemed near and clear. Fowls chattering in a yard, someone closing a door of a distant house. In their shed they found the ponies, sturdy little beasts of the kind loved by hobbits, not speedy, but good for a long day's work. They mounted, and soon they were riding off into the mist, which seemed to open reluctantly before them and close forbiddingly behind them. After riding for about an hour, slowly and without talking, they saw the hedge looming suddenly ahead. It was tall and netted over with silver cobwebs.
"How are you going to get through this?" asked Fredegar.
"Follow me," said Merry, "and you'll see."
He turned to the left along the hedge, and soon they came to a point where it bent inwards, running along the lip of a hollow. A cutting had been made at some distance from the hedge, and went sloping gently down into the ground. It had walls of brick at the sides, which rose steadily, until suddenly they arched over and formed a tunnel that dived deep under the hedge and came out in the hollow on the other side. Here Fatty Bulger halted.
"Goodbye, Frodo," he said. "I wish you weren't going into the forest. I only hope you'll not need rescuing before the day's out. But good luck to you, today and every day."
"If there are no worse things ahead than the Old Forest, I shall be lucky," said Frodo. "Tell Gandalf to hurry along the East Road. We shall soon be back on it, and going as fast as we can." "Goodbye," they cried, and rode down the slope and disappeared from Fredegar's sight into the tunnel. It was dark and damp.